This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And just get it over with. Open that Coke can.
Diet Coke.
Okay, thank you.
For all you Diet Coke distributors out there who might want to be advertising.
All right. So much to talk about this week because the Olympics are underway, not just NHL hockey anymore, and I know that's music to Ken's ears because Ken has a little announcement for everyone. He is actually literally not going to write about the NHL during the 2018 Winter Games.
I'm not only not going to write about the NHL, I'm not going to watch the NHL. I'm not going to click a single time on NHL.com. I'm not going to talk about the NHL with people. If I have to write it, I'm going to write like the big league or something like that. As soon as the men's tournament starts on Wednesday morning till it ends on whatever, February 25th or whatever, I am completely boycotting the NHL in every way, shape, and form.
So what happens if Gary Bettman, like, on February 17th walks by you on the street, is like, hey, Ken, would you not look at him and just keep walking?
Oh, no, I would say, hi, Gary.
What if you said, hey, Ken, we're putting a team in Seattle. Don't tell anyone.
Okay, that might be tough.
What if our boss Jason is like, Ken, we need you to cover the NHL. Sidney Crosby just tore his ACL.
Yeah, we already talked about that, and you guys are going to have to work extra, I guess. Meanwhile, I'm going to be watching the Olympics. I'm going to be going to see minor hockey games. I'm going to go to junior games. I'm going to do whatever, but I'm not doing the NHL. And you know what? Say what you want. I don't care what you say. I don't care.
So what? So explain why.
Because the NHL, okay, it's their league. They have every right to conduct their business the way they want. If they don't want to go to the Olympics, that's their right. My right, I have my rights too, damn it. I have my rights too. And my right is to boycott their decision because I think it's the dumbest thing the NHL has ever done. I think it's a terrible decision. I think it's an awful decision. I think that this Olympics, with the young players that are in the league right now, would have been absolutely spectacular.
It's painful to think about Crosby and McDavid on the same team.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm sorry, but I'm still pissed off. Part of the reason is because I would have been there if the NHL was there, I think.
You know, my wife asked about that. She was like, is Ken just mad because he doesn't get to go? I was like, oh, I don't know, maybe.
That's part of it. I'm not going to lie, that's part of it. But mostly I'm upset because I just think the NHL made a terrible decision, and it's the NHL being the NHL. We're going to be different. We're going to be the outliers. You know, we're going to do what nobody else would do. We're not going to do what basketball does. We're just going to do what we want to do, and I'm tired of it, and I'm just not going to consume their product. And if anybody wants to join me, feel free.
Cool. So, okay. For the record, I agree with Ken. I hate that the NHL is not going, but someone has to cover it. Otherwise, we won't exist. So I will not be boycotting because Ken called it first.
Yeah. I'm not boycotting because the IOC is stupid and I hate them. And also, they don't make basketball interrupt their season. They let basketball go in the Summer Olympics. So they hate hockey, and I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, I'm with you with a pox on both their houses for sure.
Yeah, oh, that's a good way
for sure.
It.
A pox on both their houses.
And that's an underrated thing about Ryan Kennedy for being such probably the calmest human being on the planet Earth. He has a pretty powerful hatred for the IOC.
I do. Yeah. Yeah, them and FIFA. Yeah.
Okay.
They fall down a well. It's okay with me.
Why would you have something? Why would you have it in for two organizations that are so pure?
Yeah, I know.
And uncorrupt.
Like, what have they done?
Yeah.
What have they done wrong?
Yeah, it's true.
All right. Well, while we're on the topic of the Olympics, let's talk Olympics. Let's preview the tournament, the men's and the women's. On the men's side, I mean, Russia is being talked up as the favorite. They obviously have the best players in the tournament, Ilya Kovalchuk, Pavel Datsyuk. They have good goaltending. They have good depth, and they can pull from the KHL, so they're pulling from arguably the second best league in the world. Is Russia the favorite, or does it not matter? Because even when Russia's been favored in the past, Russia has choked. I mean, we picked them to win gold in Sochi, if I remember correctly. So do you think Russia's going to win, or do you think another team's going to come and steal it?
Well, I think they're the favorite. And whether or not they realize their potential as a favorite, I mean, that's why they play the games. But they're the favorite for a couple of reasons. They have two of the best players in the tournament, forwards in the tournament, in Datsyuk and Kovalchuk. They probably have the best defenseman in the tournament in Voinov. They have the top two scorers in the KHL. But I think a big reason why the Olympic athletes of Russia will be so good is they've the way they built their team. They have 16 guys on that team from St. Petersburg, which is the league juggernaut, and another 8 guys from Central Army. So that's like almost all of their team is basically from two teams, the two best teams in the KHL. You know, they've got the top two scorers in the KHL. Kovalchuk's leading the league in scoring. Nikita Gusev is second in scoring. You know, I mean, they should win. They really should win. But, I mean, they've proven in the past that they can find a way to screw this up. You know, I mean, I think beyond that, I mean, I think Canada's got a really good team. I think Canada's got a terrific team. Like, really, you know, I mean, Gilbert Brulé is pretty high in scoring in the KHL. Like, is, you know, I mean, you know, Bork and Mason Raymond and guys like Wojtek Wolski, are they any worse than Mikhail Grigorenko or Shipachev or any of those other guys that Russia has? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Canada, I think, is going to be thin on defense. I think Finland's probably got the best goalie in the tournament in Koskinen. But they're probably a bit thin. They've got Heiskanen and they've got Tolvanen. So, you know, I mean, Sweden, they're going to have Rasmus Dahlin. I think it's a real toss up. I think Russia should win. I think they will win, but I don't think it's an absolute shoe in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I kind of feel like there's just something where when it seems so obvious, it never turns out that way, particularly in these tournaments, where I can totally see Russia losing in, like, the quarterfinal to, like, a scrappy team like Finland Switzerland.
Right.
Yeah, like, Switzerland's got Jonas Hiller in net. You know, he's a pretty good NHL goaltender in his day. Or, like, Ben Scrivens shuts them out in the semifinal. You know, it'd be like a 50-shot shutout, like, back in his Oilers days. You know, Canada will score, like, one on the power play. That sort of thing. It just seems like it's too easy to pick Russia, even though on paper. And I like what you said about the team chemistry, having all the SKA guys and the Red Army guys. It just feels like they're going to trip over their own feet at some point.
They may very well.
I also, like, I was watching some of the women's game the other day that was the athletes of Russia versus Canada, and every time I see those jerseys, I crack up because they're the funniest things in the world.
And the men left. The women were down 3-0, and didn't the men leave?
Did they?
Yeah. Wow. I heard that they got up. They were like, all right, we've seen enough of this, and they abandoned their... That's not a good sign.
They shouldn't even have showed up if they thought that the team was going to beat Canada.
I guess.
They really shouldn't even have come. But it was hilarious at the World Juniors during the press conference with Rani Fizel.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking about how they had to... how they couldn't use red and white and how they had to use a different color scheme and how they had to go through all these colors and they had to pick this and that. And I put up my hand. I said, so, okay, so what color are they wearing? He goes, red and white.
Yeah. But a different red.
But a different red and white. A different red. Like they couldn't use the white that they used and they couldn't use the red that they used. They had to use a different hue of it or something.
Eggshell and scarlet. Yeah.
But you know what? We've been through this before, kind of. In 1992, you were what? 6 months old then?
No, I was 28. No, I was
months.
Nine. I was nine and already a hockey nut.
Albert Olympics. So in 1992, the Soviet Union broke up in the middle of the World Junior Championship, and the Soviet team had to become the Commonwealth of Independent States.
CIS, yeah.
And they won it in Germany, in Fussen, Germany. Canada was terrible that year. They finished sixth or eighth or something. It was one of the worst finishes ever for them. But we've seen this before where they, you know, really can't kind of represent their own country, but they really are, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And actually, in the Olympics in 92, they were, weren't they Team Unified or something like that? Yeah,
that sounds right.
Yeah, they were in 1992. They were Team Unified. So, So we've kind of seen this act before. Yeah.
It's interesting. What I wonder is, so in theory, the merging the Red Army and St. Petersburg is a great idea. But what if it's the equivalent of, like, okay, guys, we're going to make a team of only Penguins and Capitals, and you're taking two bitter rivals and putting them together on the same team in the middle of their season?
I'll point to
Could it backfire?
No, because I'll tell you, 1980, Miracle on Ice. Oh. Half the team was from Minnesota. Half the team was from Massachusetts. They all hated each other. They came together as a cohesive unit. and won probably, you know, probably had one of the greatest moments in the history of sports.
And that's a great comparison, except for the fact that, if anything, there couldn't be a team that was less burdened by expectation than the 1980 men.
Correct.
Whereas the Russians are the Oars. Expected to win. And I mean, I agree on paper. They even have Kirill Kaprizov, who's a great prospect.
He's a terrific prospect. Yeah, he's pretty high in scoring in the KHL.
They've got a lot of skill, and I worry Canada, especially out of the sort of contender teams, doesn't have the same kind of high-end skill. Mm. I think Sweden is a sleeper. Obviously, Rasmus Dahlin, but they have other guys that have skill, like Linus Omark has got skill. If things go to a shootout,
And he's third in scoring in the
KHL. Yeah, he's got some skill. Even like Victor Stahlberg's got some good speed, good size. And Sweden's goaltending, you got Victor Foss, Jonas Enroth. I feel like Sweden is my, if you can call any team, a sleeper. Yeah. I don't know if there's such thing as a sleeper in this tournament, but I don't know. I can see them stealing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Or a Finland. Finland, doesn't this tournament have Finland winning it written all over it?
Totally.
Because it's going to take a team where everybody's really knows each other. So the Finns, the good thing about the Finns is the elite players play together from the time they're 3 to the time they're 50, right? because there's only so many of them, right? So they all play together, and they're really scrappy, and this would be the kind of tournament where a team would just like claw and scrap its way to the gold medal. So I could certainly see, and I think goaltending is going to be a huge factor, and I think Koskinen is probably, I don't know, he's one of the better goalies in this tournament for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll get good goaltending. I mean, the standard of goaltending is so high in the world that I think goaltending will be the category that slips the least without NHLers.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Ben Skrivens has a .917 save percentage in the KHL. He's not even in the top 30 in save percentage in the KHL with a .917.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
So either they can't shoot in the KHL or the goalies are really good. Yeah. But anyways, Canada, going back to Canada, I don't care if there's NHLers, non-NHLers, if you're putting, if it's going to be, the Don Mills selects playing or whatever, Canada should never, ever be an underdog in any tournament. They just shouldn't. There's too many resources, too many players, too much money in it that Canada should be considered an underdog in a tournament. They shouldn't be.
Fair.
Yeah.
What does it mean that we haven't even mentioned USA? Are we all sour on USA? It's kind of strange. Or is it just because they're kind of stuck in the murky middle?
I don't think we're sour on USA so much as just they are, I would say, similar to Canada in that I liked that the Americans took some young guys. So they actually have players that will be in the NHL in a year or two, i.e. Jordan Greenway, Troy Terry. So I like that. And then you've got some of the older guys like Gianta where, they're a little past their prime, but you kind of even it all out. So I feel like Canada has a bunch of decent guys and Team USA has some up and comers and some guys that are long in the tooth, and it kind of squares away that
way. It's funny. I was USA had a conference call with some of their players. They had Jordan Greenway on there. Tony Granato was on there. Ryan Zapolsky, who's their goalie, was on there. And they opened it up for questions, and I said a question. I said, I have to preface this question with a confession. I said, Ryan, I got to confess that before you were named to the American Olympic team, I'd never heard of you.
Yeah.
And I work at the Hockey News.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of the guy.
Neither had I.
I had never heard of him.
And that's what I'm worried about for USA. No disrespect to him, but I just think all the other contender teams have pretty experienced goaltenders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the U.S. is a step below.
But he's put up pretty good numbers in the KHL. He's playing for Jokerit in the KHL, and he's actually been one of the better goalies in that league. So, the way I said it was, I don't know. I don't remember. I was only 15 at the time, but I don't know how many people knew who Jim Craig was before the 1980 Olympics. Really? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe a lot of people did. I don't know if they knew if who he was or not. But, it could happen, right? Sure. I like USA's defense. Yeah. I really like USA's defense. I like the fact that they have some really good veteran guys on there, like Jonathan Blum and James Wisniewski, Matt Gilroy. They've got Bobby Sanguinetti. I think their defense is pretty solid.
Cool, good. On the women's side, there's only really one question to ask, but it's a great question. It's a great debate.
It's
only Canada and USA, but their rivalry is phenomenal, and it's 20 years old now at the Olympic level. So who you got? Because the pattern is the same, right? Canada always wins the Olympics. Every tournament in between, it seems like the U.S. is dominant. So is that going to change, or is there finally going to be a changing of the guard with USA, who, I mean, was a minute away from winning gold in Sochi, and they hit the post of the empty net. So who you got?
It's strange because Canada's won the last four Olympics. USA's won seven of the last eight world championships. This year, they played a six-game series. Canada won five games. USA won both games in the Four Nations. But Canada, Shannon Sabatos didn't play in goal for Canada for either one of those games. They lost 5-1 and 4-2. So, you know, we're looking at they played a total of eight games. Canada won five. USA won three. Canada scored 19 goals. USA scored 18 goals. So, but you have to keep in mind that none of these games featured what are going to be, you know, the two teams that we're all presuming are going to play in the gold medal game
here. Right.
I basically think it's a coin flip. It comes down to who's going to be the better team on February 20, whatever. Mm. Whatever day
it's
that is.
It's your job to know this, Ken. You're not covering the NHL. Come on.
No, but it's just going to be whoever's the better team on that day, as it always comes down to those two teams. I mean, 2010 or 2006 was the aberration where U.S. lost to Sweden in the semifinal game, and Canada, walked over Sweden in the gold medal game. But I mean, when they're this closely matched and they're both this elite, I mean, it really does come down to which team has it on that day. I mean, the U.S. has a really good team, man. Mm-hmm. They cut Alex Carpenter
and Megan Bozak.
They cut they're like world-class, elite players. Mm-hmm. And I think Canada, it's really interesting. Canada's kind of got a team that's now in a bit of a transition. Haley Wickenheiser's not playing for the first time in 20 years. Some of their older guards gone. And now it's Megan Augusta and Marie-Philippe Poulin who are picking up the leadership mantle from people like Jana Heffer and Haley Wickenheiser and that. So, I mean, I expect it's going to be a really good, really competitive, really intense, probably a physical game, and it'll probably come down to one goal, maybe in overtime, who knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have two X factors. One is, we've seen one of the superpowers stumble in the past, and the rest of women's hockey, the national teams they're getting better. They're not the same level as Team USA and Canada yet. But they're getting better. I think what we saw from Russia in the first game is light years ahead of what Russia had been in the past. Yeah. I think that's a great sign. But I look at Finland and they got Noora Ratti in net, and it's like it's that one game. It's that one game at the right time that can throw everything out of whack. And could Noora Ratti throw up a huge shutout? Sure, she could. But if we're going to assume that it's going to be Canada and the U.S. in the final, which it most likely will be, my X factor is with Carpenter and Bozak. Like, Team USA seemed to have a master plan where they had sequestered all the women in Florida, mm-hmm. and that was their roster. And then they were like, maybe it's not the roster, and we're going to bring a couple of other players in, and then we got to cut a couple, and then they cut Carpenter and Bozak. It just feels like, why were you playing with fate there? Like, why are you testing things? You're supposed to have this whole master plan, and I don't know if that's going to affect the finished product, but if there was going to be a bit of an X factor, that would be it for me, is that they seemingly had a team that was beating Canada pretty regularly, and then they decided to mess with the formula. I don't know why they did that. And
And we're only a year and change removed from this team being in some pretty serious turmoil with respect to their contract status
and I was going to say to me that's a pro, and that's my X factor
together,
for Team USA is the fact that they fought for proper wage treatment and proper conditions, proper everything to be treated equitable compared to the men's on Team USA. Even though Megan Bozak was a big part of that, unfortunately. I talked to her a lot about it last year, but I still think it was a huge rallying point, and I feel like that brought a lot of the core of Team USA together. And I also think if you were to name the best three players in the world right now, I think two of the three are American: Hillary Knight, Brianna Decker, and I think Marie-Philippe Poulin is the third.
No, I think Marie-Philippe Poulin is the best player in the world, and Megan Augusta is in second or
third. I think Augusta has come and gone because she's also working as a cop. She doesn't play as much, so she kind of she comes back into public consciousness every time the Olympics roll around, but we don't get to see as much of her in between.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Hillary Knight is dominant. She and it was so awesome to see her at the All-Star game, just outdoing the men in the accuracy shooting as well. But I honestly think if you did a poll on Twitter, the best players in the world, you're going to get Decker, Knight, and Poulin. So two of the three, in my opinion, are American right now. Yeah. And again, it is a coin flip. So when it's a coin flip situation, I do think emotional factors, little intangibles do matter. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they won that battle this year for their rights.
And Hillary Knight scored in overtime of the World Championship game this year. So she delivered on the big stage in the big game. You wonder if it does come down to, the last minute or overtime, whether or not the Americans start to get a case of the yips.
They would have reason to, and
you'd understand if they did. Guys, in Sochi, Canada had nothing. Canada had nothing going until the last couple of minutes of that game, and then they took it over. I was like sitting there going, okay, I'm going to do my Julie Chu feature for the magazine because she's going to be the story because U.S. is going to win. And then everything was turned on its head.
And I do wonder if Canada gets into deep water, will it be strange to look down the bench and not have Haley Wickenheiser sitting there to rally the troops?
Well, it's funny because Haley, leading up to the last Olympics, Haley Wickenheiser wasn't playing all that well. Mm-hmm. Like, she was in her mid-30s, and she was starting to fall a step behind, but in that gold medal game, not even close.
Yeah, she was
who was the best player? Monster. Who was the deciding factor? Mm. It was Haley Wickenheiser by a million miles. And you sit there and you go, because I had heard sort of through the grapevine and stuff that they were thinking that, she might not even make the team.
Wow.
And then you look and you go, yeah, that's why they took her.
Interesting. So yeah, I guess we're sort of not split down the middle because there are three of us.
No, we have to pick a winner. We have to all pick a winner in the gold medal game.
All right, I'll say Canada. Marie-Philippe Poulin does clutch things as she always does.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with that too.
You're gonna go USA, and it's the Hillary Knight show. Also, shout out to Kayla Barnes, who I covered, I think it was 6 years ago. She was a little kid playing in the boys' peewee tournament with Quebec.
Nice. Yeah.
She made the team, which is badass. So if you're listening, Kayla Barnes, good for you. Yeah. Let's switch to the NHL. Ken, are you going to leave now?
No, my boycott doesn't take effect till Wednesday.
All right. So
NHL, NHL, NHL. I can say this many times as I want.
Calgary Flames, they currently hold the playoff spot by 1 point over Anaheim and L.A. in the Pacific, but they've just lost Mike Smith. It's too early to know if the injury is serious, but it's a groin injury, so is there any such thing as a non-serious groin injury when it's a goalie? I'm not sure. How worried are you guys about the Flames right now?
Yeah,
their playoff chances.
Those things tend to linger, don't they? Yeah. Well, they're practicing today in Boston, but Smith is nowhere to be found, apparently, at practice. David Rittich was going to play tomorrow night anyways against the Bruins, so I guess we can't read too much into that. But, obviously it depends on the severity of the injury. I mean, another problem for the Flames is that Tyler Parsons, who's one of their veteran goalies in the American League, got wiped out this weekend too, and he may be on the shelf as well. So you're looking at a possible David Rittich, John Gillies tandem, which going down the stretch when you're life and death to make the playoffs, I'm not sure you want to do that. As well as Rittich has played, that's asking an awful lot of a couple of guys who have very little experience at the NHL level.
Tyler Parsons is not a veteran, though. He just turned rookie pro.
Oh, really?
Had been with the London Knights.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, he got wiped out over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see, John Gillies really seize the mantle if he gets that opportunity. But in the short term, Calgary's got a bit of a tough schedule stretch. They have Boston twice in the next four games.
Yikes.
And Nashville's in there as well. So you look at that, and even if Mike Smith's only gone like a week or two, like the Flames are really going to have to do big things in his absence. I don't know. I think like if it's only a week or two, I think they'll be okay because they've got great firepower up front. That defense core is coming together like we always assumed they would in the first place. And I mean, sometimes unknown goalies, and I say unknown to as in the NHL shooters don't have a book on them, sometimes they can kind of catch lightning in a bottle in the short term.
Sure. Yeah.
And maybe with Rittich and Gillies, you know, if I'm going glass half full, that's what happens for Calgary. Is they got a couple of really nice starts from those guys, and you know, maybe the Monahan Gaudreau combo steals another game for them, and then they go from there. But it's certainly not ideal.
It's interesting with Gillies too, because his pedigree is quite good, and in our Future Watch rankings, he's been one of our top ranked goalies for several years. And the pedigree to me is similar to Matt Murray, who's another guy who came in because of an injury situation, got his chance in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. So you wonder if Gillies gets a chance to run with it. Maybe he really shows something. At the same time, Mike Smith, he's a goalie. I mean, he's the best puck-handling goalie in the NHL. He relies a lot on mobility, and that's a guy that you can't rush back because for him to be at his best, he's got to be limber, and he can't risk a re-injury. Mm. So I do wonder, if you're Brad Treliving, do you have to think about a cheap Band-Aid trade? If you find out, let's say, Smith is going to be out a month,
right?
Do you kick the tires on an Antti Raanta or Michael Hutchinson?
I absolutely think you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, look at it. Let's look at it this way. You have to consider how good your team is without its most valuable player, without its best player, because he's been that this year for them, right?
Right.
You know, some teams can weather that storm, particularly when it's not at such an important position, but. Yeah, I mean, if this is a long-term thing, I think he's got to explore some options here because, like I said, it's just there's a real lack of NHL experience there. Right. I'd be really worried about
it. And every point counts right now with how tight.
So how many games have they played on the road in this trip? Because they got four left, three or four left?
They only have like two or three. I think they have two left.
Oh, it's too
but it's
bad.
Been a big stretch on the road.
Yeah, but yeah. And they're outstanding on the road. Like they're ridiculous on the road this year.
Interesting. So, yeah. Some fascinating to say the least comments from Brendan Gallagher after Montreal and Nashville played each other on the weekend. He was not very kind to PK Subban after Montreal lost in overtime. And he basically said, I mean, he was asked several times about Subban, and he said, you know, I don't know why you guys are talking about PK. He wants everything to be about PK all the time. He wants attention. So it was pretty scathing. And it kind of ties in, I mean, you know, the fact that Subban was traded at all, the fact that he wasn't named captain, that it was Max Pacioretty. And there's long, I mean, in our experiences, talking to different players, and I mean, we can talk about it more now, but it seems like a lot of, as much as the fans love PK and as much as the media love PK, a lot of players don't seem to love PK. Do you think that means that he has a shelf life in every team he plays on because of the fact that he seemed to wear out his teammates because of his, I don't know, his exciting antics and his love of attention?
Oh, it's funny. You know, I think it depends on the team he's on, and I think it depends on the leadership group of the team that he's on. Mm. Any team that PK Subban plays for has to have a very, very strong leadership group, okay? And ironically, you know, the guy that might have been able to keep him in line in Montreal is the guy he was traded for, right? You know what I mean? Right. Like I'm just not sure that they had the leadership group in Montreal that could absorb the tsunami that is PK Subban. Mm. You know, I think in Nashville, they're much better equipped to do that with some of the guys they have and some of the leaders they have. Mm. And you start to put pieces together, eh, a little bit. Wow, Mike Fisher's coming back. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just in time for the most important time of the season and the playoffs, you know, because I know that Mike Fisher, I know this for sure. Last year when PK went off about the whole Listerine thing, PK made it about PK. Mm. And he started to do some things like product placement in his locker, in his stall and everything. And I know that Mike Fisher was one of the guys that said, enough is enough. That's it. That you're not the sideshow right now. We're in the Stanley Cup final. That's not happening. Okay. So And then it, well, didn't it also helped that they didn't make him available for 3 days after he said it. But I really think that it depends on the leadership group that the team has. I think Nashville has a good leadership group. One of the first things David Poile did when he traded for PK Subban was he brought in PK and he brought in all of his people, which is like
his sister,
fashion guys, his sister, is this guy, his endorsement guy. How do we all get on the same page? And I think that's really, really important. Mm. You know, PK Subban will wear out his welcome when PK Subban is no longer worth the trouble.
But yes,
right now he's worth the trouble. Right now he's worth the trouble. Right now he's worth the trouble because he's one of the best defensemen in the league, and he may win the Norris Trophy this year. Mm. So he's worth the trouble. But once PK Subban starts to become less of a player, that's when he's going to wear out his welcome a lot more.
Fair. Yeah, I know. Speaking with Subban earlier in the season, he was very pleased and grateful that Nashville gave him a letter this year and made him part of the leadership group. And, I kind of look at the other side of this where, you know, we talk about, was PK not fitting in Montreal's culture? It's like, do we really want to... Do you want to emulate Montreal's culture right now? Like,
no.
What exactly is going well with that organization?
Right.
Other than, like, the fact that Trevor Timmons is really good at drafting, but they keep trading away the guys he drafts. Other than that, like, why would you, like, do you want to be in that dressing room? It doesn't seem like a good dressing room.
Yeah.
So, is it PK's fault, or is it a lot of the other guys? It's certainly a combination of the two that didn't work, but I have to wonder, like, yeah, I don't know if, you know, I mean, we're already looking at that trade as a gong show.
It
was the day it happened, let's face it. But I think everything we've seen from Montreal since has indicated that it's a shipwreck.
And Montreal did everything they possibly could to beat the personality out of PK Subban.
Mm-hmm.
They tried and tried and tried, and the concern I have in that respect is, and I've said it before, I think when you beat that out of a player, you beat out his personality on the ice a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep going back to an example that's a prime example for me, and that's Dion Phaneuf. When he first came in with the Calgary Flames, he was flamboyant, he was outspoken, he had a lot of personality, you know, and he showed it on the ice too. He wasn't afraid to make plays. He wasn't afraid to put himself in risky situations, and he was terrific.
Yep.
And I believe that the Calgary Flames and some of the people involved in that management group beat that personality out of him. And now what you get when you talk to Dion Phaneuf is a guy who rocks on one foot and the other foot and speaks monosyllabically and doesn't say much and doesn't give much. And I think on the ice, you're seeing a guy who just chips it off the boards now and makes a whole crap load of money doing it, but doesn't have a lot of on-ice personality either.
That's fair.
And I think you beat that out of him. And I think that's the risk you run with a guy like PK Subban. So you walk a very, very, very fine line. You want the guy to be the guy that is always wants to win the game, you know? Like the game in Toronto last week, I mean, he made 15 mistakes and he made 15 great plays. And I was just sitting there watching, like, this guy's life is a frat party.
And he's fearless. You know?
And everything's always happening when he's on the ice and when he's off the ice. He goes down and he screams and he has a near-death experience. 36 seconds was the next shift and he was back out on the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, you take the good with the bad with the guy.
Yeah. And with PK, I mean, it's always going to be he goes against hockey culture. And whether, I mean, part of it could be racially motivated, but even if he was a white guy, it's just his personality is big, and big personalities in hockey get squashed. And if PK was playing in the NFL or the NBA, branding himself and being willing to build that brand and celebrate himself would not be frowned upon in the same way. It's much more common. But I mean, that's why I say it's important. Like, we're the messengers here. We're not necessarily saying that we don't like when PK does it. It's more that from what we've experienced, other players don't seem to like it because there's that sort of just you're supposed to fall in line, go along with the team.
Right.
And PK goes against that. But it's too bad because I do think he's so good for the game. He's so interesting and he's funny and he does so much for charity. But it just, hockey culture is allergic to personality sometimes.
It really is. It's a shame. The NHL does its best to bury that kind of thing, and other sports celebrate it.
That's right. Time for a couple reader questions. This is a doozy from Katie Lee. And Katie Lee says, who is the most overrated and underrated player of the salary cap era? That's a tough one. Very tough one.
All right. I'll start with underrated, because it's more fun that way. I got two names, because I wasn't sure if I was going first or not. So I'm going to go with Evgeny Malkin and Andre Kopitar. I think their resumes speak for themselves. Multiple Stanley Cups, award winners, guys that have put up a ton of points in the past 10 years. And we don't talk about them that often. We've said it before that, you know, Malkin was clearly snubbed for the top 100 players of all time by the NHL. But, I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
No question. I mean, the numbers and the awards and the citations he's put up, bar none. And then with Kopitar, again, like, one of the best players on two Stanley Cup winning teams. You know, you look at the template of a number one center, and he has all the elements. You know, he's got the size, he's got the skill, but he also has that great two-way shutdown capability that so many young players these days are emulating. And again, I know he had an off year last season, but all the Kings did, basically. So I would go with those two. And then for overrated, I was going to be a little trolly and say Jerome Iginla, because his best years were pre-salary cap.
Oh.
But if we're going to keep it, you know, contemporary, I'm going to go with Kevin Shattenkirk. Particularly in the, like, right now and last year, he was supposed to be the big trade deadline acquisition. Was not good in the playoffs. Then he was supposed to be the big free agent signing in the summer, and that hasn't gone very well in New York. And I know he's injured as well. But if we're talking about, like, salary cap, and I'm putting a money aspect into it as well. I mean, most teams would love to have Kevin Shattenkirk, but maybe not at that price. So I'll say Kevin Shattenkirk.
Interesting.
Okay, you go. Then I'll go.
Overrated. I mean, I think Pekka Rinne is probably my guy. The numbers look great on the outside, but if you look under the hood, other than this season, analytically, Rinne has not been. I mean, there's been seasons recently where he was regarded by the layman fan as a top end goalie, and he was below average. Not just average, below average. His road splits, career-wise, have always been pretty weak, especially in the playoffs last year, but throughout his whole career. He's a good goalie, but I feel like when his career's done, he's going to be talked up as a potential Hall of Famer when, I don't know, under the hood, those numbers are he was an average goalie for much of his career. As much as I like him, as much as he's fun to watch, he's very athletic. In the era of analytics, the analytics are not very kind to Pekka Rinne. In terms of underrated, there's a few. I mean, Max Pacioretty, I think, is very underrated. Brad Marchand, because of his personality. But to me, my guy's Blake Wheeler.
That's good.
He's a great leader. He does so many things well. He makes other players around him better. He's so skilled, and he's often near the top of the list among league scorers, around that top 10. Never even gets sniffed for major awards. Never a whiff.
That was at the dog.
That's right. And even all-star selections for so many years, doesn't get the love. So he's my guy, Blake Wheeler.
Okay, man, people are going to hate me.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God. Here we go. People are going to hate me. They're going to hate me so much.
Like more?
Yeah. I got three guys. Two of them are New York Rangers.
Oh, boy.
One's Rick Nash.
That's fair.
The other one's Henrik Lundqvist.
Oh.
Win something.
He's won a lot. He's won Olympic gold.
World championship? Okay. World championships.
He's got to the cup final.
We're talking about the NHL. Win something. Just win something. Okay.
He's come to within a few wins of a cup.
And the other one, okay, why don't you just start punching me now? Pavel Datsyuk.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yes.
I know you've got your Datsyuk tired. Thing.
Are you saying over or under?
Over.
Okay, just
he's
checking.
Overrated because everybody thinks he's underrated, first of all. Secondly, He had 4 years where he was an elite offensive player. He played 14 years in the NHL. He had 4 years where he was elite 90-point, 85-point player. The rest of the years, he was 50,
60. 97, twice.
Yeah, yeah. The rest of the years, he was like a 50, 60-point guy. And I just got tired of seeing everybody crave Pavel Datsyuk and praise him and everything because he scored one highlight goal every 2 weeks. Got tired of that.
Do you ever think that he could have scored a lot more points if he wasn't, you know, winning, what do they call those, Selke trophies? And Stanley Cups?
Hey.
Those big shiny things?
Well, it's weird, eh? It's weird how another guy from Russia, Sergei Fedorov, you know, he managed to do both too. You know? Mark Messier, in my opinion, when he was putting up 120 points, should have been winning Selke trophies. There are guys who do it, okay? So, bleh.
Okay? Ken just made a little child face.
Okay, so, fight me. Fight me. And my underrated player, I got two of those too. Nicklas Backstrom.
Oh, good one. Yeah. Very good
and
one.
And Ryan Getzlaf.
Getzlaf underrated, eh?
Yeah, I believe he's properly underrated. Rated. Yeah. Yeah. You think he's properly rated?
I feel he's like rated.
He's rated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go.
But I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to state your case or just going to?
No, I'll just leave it out there. I'll just leave
good
it.
Good guys.
I'll just let it germinate with
there
people.
You go. Okay. And while that
because we don't have much time.
Yeah, we're running long here. So while that germinates, I'm laughing now, guys. But we're gonna decide between this week and next week whether Ken gets to be on the next podcast.
Hey,
maybe we'll hold a poll.
Yeah,
we're gonna hold a poll.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
So stay tuned for the poll, which I think Ken's gonna lose.
But you have to say given that I'm not gonna talk about the NHL. So if I come on the podcast next week, the understanding is. As long as you guys are talking about the NHL, I'm not going to say anything.
Right, right.
Okay. If you talk about anything non-NHL, I will talk, but I'm not talking about the NHL.
Slovenia versus Korea. Who you got?
We should ambush Ken and just get him to come in the room and sit, but then we just talk about the NHL. So just make Ken sit there in silence and bite his nails the whole time.
I bet you the fandom would love that.
Yep. Okay, stay tuned, everyone, on Twitter for Ken Campbell Decision 2018.